Hey, soccer fans, this is Nick for Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central. Nick as Joliet Jake Blues on this fine Halloween evening. I know I set the timer for a little later in the night to make sure everyone could have enough time to partake in the Halloween festivities, but whoo, man, I am sugar crashing right now. So I wanted to make sure that I put out an episode for you before I just went down for the night after partaking of many, many Three Musketeers and Milky Ways, by far my favorite. But anyway, in tonight's episode, we are going to discuss MLS Cup. We have the team set. We have LAFC from the West, and we have Philadelphia Union from the East, the two teams that I've wanted to see since about the midpoint of the season, the two best teams throughout the course of the season. We finally, after many, many years of upsets in the playoff, get the 1-2 matchup, the two top seeds. It's kind of an incredible thing. LAFC have the opportunity to go for the double, the Shield and MLS Cup double, not a US Open double. So this is pretty big for both of these teams. But we're going to look at their conference final matchups. And then in the second half, we're going to look at some of the other news around the league. Despite the MLS Cup being the focus, we have some news that you're going to want to hear. But before all that, as we always do, let's hear that intro. What's up, guys? Once again, this is Nick as Joliet Jake Blues here at Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central. We are kicking off the conversation a little earlier than I scheduled just to make sure that, you know, we actually have a little energy. So have a few pieces of candy and let's dive right in. First of all, gotta say welcome to the chat, Brother BKL Contreras, our sportertainment guy. Brother BKL, sorry to hear about the NYCFC not making it to the finals for you. But, man, that was a great game against Philly for sure. Also, we got Angus McCorder jumping into the chat. Great to see you as well. And as always, hope you got to enjoy some of the festivities on this Halloween night. So we appreciate you guys jumping in. And for everyone listening on the podcast, we have been doing weekly Monday night live recaps here on YouTube. So make sure that you come over to the YouTube channel and subscribe so you get those updates. And for everyone else, make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you cannot miss any of our SOP action. Want to quick remind everyone, if you like the show and you want to support us, there's really two easy things you can do. Click like, click subscribe, click on an ad, let the ads play when you watch the video or listen to it on the podcast. Real easy way to support us, put a few pennies in our pockets that we reinvest into the show. If you really want to take the next level and support us financially, use a super thanks or a super chat via YouTube, or you can even reach out and sponsor the show. You can email us, sonsofapitchsoccer@gmail.com, or find us on Twitter at SOP Soccer. We are more than happy to discuss sponsorships with the show on social media or through the website that we are developing. And with a little extra funding, we'll be able to get it across the line. Some great early comments. Yes, BKL says he looks like a Blues Brother or a Mafia gang member. Went for the Blues Brothers look today. Had a lot of fun at work in the costume contest. And Angus's reply, or maybe a head honcho of FIFA. They can be extortionists. Yeah, you guys aren't wrong in either one of those comments, but was going for Blues Brother. You know, in my 38 years on this planet and being from around the Chicagoland area, first time I've ever donned the Blues Brothers outfit. So with that said, with the housekeeping and with those great initial comments, we need to get right into the MLS action as we recap the Western Conference final here with LAFC and Austin. And the first thing we got to do is we got to give a shout out to one of our show's longtime friends and supporters, Ramon Poblano, and his supporters group, Los Cuervos, part of the 3252. Congratulations, Ramon, and to all of your supporters out there for LAFC making it to the finals and hosting the finals. You're going to enjoy it, man. Send us some pictures if you get a chance. Let us know how the atmosphere is in the bank for the MLS Cup final. That's got to be an insane atmosphere. Now let's take a quick look at this LAFC 3-0 victory over Austin, because the game was fun to watch, but the stats really aren't bearing out everything that the game said. So let's take a look here, as we've got Rocky and Connor Knows Soccer jumping on in. Great to have you guys jumping in. Appreciate you accommodating our little change of schedule on this Halloween night. And by the way, guys, if you like Portland Timbers, and we're going to talk about Portland Timbers news in the second half, make sure you follow Rocky at Talk Into Woods. And make sure you follow Connor Knows Soccer for all sorts of additional MLS and even some English Premier League coverage that he's got going on. If you can't see that Arsenal jersey in his profile picture there. But looking at LAFC Austin, 3-0 victory. LAFC gets on the board in the first half with an Arango goal in the 29th. In the second half, they catch a bit of a lucky break. Arudi with an own goal in the 62nd minute. And then Opoku seals the deal in the 81st minute. And I think that Opoku goal was kind of indicative of the night, where LAFC absorbed pressure, countered, and just Austin could not get numbers back to defend in time. And Opoku was able to take advantage of a misstep by the defender, put the ball opposite post. Goalie had no chance on it. But let's take a look at these stats, because would you expect a team with a 3-0 victory to only have 51% possession? Maybe not. So LAFC, even though they absorbed a lot of Austin's pressure, they did have their moments on the ball. But here's the big difference, guys, what they did with that possession. LAFC had 22 shots, 10 on goal, to Austin's 7 shots with 1 on net, right? Did not have to make Maxime Crepeau, who had a very average year this year, do much work. So that is huge. And if you look at the passing, 389 and 371 passes, but LAFC with 81% passing to Austin 74. We're going to look at some of those passing breakdowns and really show you what the game plans were for both of these teams. But for LAFC, they were really getting into these offensive zones. 11 corners, 8 crosses, 3 offsides. Austin did outduel them, but I think that's just the product of LAFC being on the attack more often. And also Austin with 3 yellow cards, indicative that, you know, they were the ones that were on the back foot there. Now to Brad Stuver's credit, the Austin FC goalkeeper, he still had 7 saves, yet 3 balls found their way in the back of his net. So that was a tough night to be a goalkeeper for sure. Now looking at some of the passing statistics here, we see that in the final third, LAFC completed 73% of their passes, which is above average at the very least. Usually those final third passing percentage numbers are somewhere down in the 60% range for a lot of the teams. But for Austin, it was only 48%. So you saw them desperately trying to string things together towards the end of that game. And if we go back up and take a look at some of their crosses, they still only whipped in 5 crosses. So they really got away from what happened to them in that RSL game where they ended up having 60 crosses. Maybe they went too far. Maybe it was an overcorrection. Maybe they should have tried to play a few crosses in, a few more crosses in, at least towards the end of that game or after that second goal. And also looking, here's the possession intervals. So you got to see some different kind of breakdowns in possession there. But looking at the expected goals, Austin never really had any good opportunities. Only a 0.3 expected goal for them, whereas LAFC had a 2.1 expected goal. Now, a lot of that is just volume. I don't think LAFC had, let's take a look at here, their highest expected goal was actually a 0.35, a 35% chance for Cifuentes. And then later on, let's see if it'll let me click on it. Yeah, that's just coming up as an own goal. But really, LAFC created their own goals or their expected goals by volume. Meanwhile, Austin, take a look at the shooting breakdown. And I wish they'd put the shooting breakdown with the XG. You can see Austin shots. They only had, like we said, these handful of shots, 4 in the box, 3 of them coming right in front from the center, so easier for the goalkeeper. And then 2 shots from outside the box. Not good opportunities for Austin. Giriussi looked frustrated. LAFC came in with the right game plan. And guys, LAFC, best team in the West all year. They end up doing it, getting the job done. What did you guys think of LAFC's performance? What did you think about how Austin came out and what they did? Let us know in the comments while we take a quick look at some of these lineups so we can show you how this affected the game, because Austin really could not string together a lot of passes for large chunks of this game, despite them being able to have possession throughout most of the season. LAFC really demonstrated that they can play two kinds of games, that they can play a possession game and play a counterattacking game. And you see LAFC lined up in their 4-3-3, while Austin lined up in that 4-2-3-1, trying to play a possession game. But when you got Ilya in the center mid for LAFC playing that D-mid role, when you got Kellen Acosta all fired up, especially towards the end of that second half, getting in some of the Austin players' faces, just chirping, killing off time at the end, it's going to be a very, very steep uphill battle for sure. And hey, we got a comment here from Brother BKL says, when Austin keep passing from the first half, 25% long ball and 0% crosses, they came, or it was too much sloppy from the first half to the second half. Yes, Brother BKL, you're right. When they had those spells of possession in the first half, they couldn't do anything with it, couldn't get quality chances. And then in the second half, they were unable to play solid ball. It was all sloppy. And as you can see from some, as I try to bring up those possession stats again, that'll confirm what BKL said, right? Here are some good stretches in the first half, couple stretches in the second half. But when it counted the last 15 minutes of the game, it was LAFC that was able to kind of kill it off and see it out there. Now let's go over to the Eastern Conference, where we saw the Philadelphia Union come from behind victory. New York City goes up in the 57th minute on a Maxi Morales goal. He had himself a great playoff run, despite NYCFC getting knocked out in the conference finals. But Philly comes back, and this 60th to 70th minute, that was the game, right? How they responded to going down a goal. Carranza in the 65th, 8 minutes after Morales scores. Then Gazdag in the 67th, 2 minutes later. Then Burke again in the 76th minute. So Philly really amped it up after going down 1-0. That is the sign of a champion. That is the sign of a team who is out for trophies. That is the sign of a team who, as they had been saying all postseason, unfinished business. They had, what, like 9 or 11 players out with COVID protocols last playoff game against New York City last season. They wanted this game more than ever. We already got a couple comments. We got Red Bull Insider joining us in the chat. Happy Halloween, everyone. Happy Halloween, RBI. Happy Halloween, Red Bull Insider. Hope you're getting your fair share of candy. Angus McCorder says it. Philly suddenly clicked the on switch, then the game was over. And that on switch is something that people have been critical of New York City's. Do they have it, right? People were even saying for Philly, do they have it? Because they've been so good all season. Well, they showed it. New York City could not handle it. But let's look at some of the statistics, because the statistics, especially the possession here, are really interesting, right? 35% possession for Philly, 65% possession for New York City. I want to jump down real quick and look at those possession splits, these five-minute splits here. Look at that. It is all City blue. Philadelphia only controlled 3 5-minute intervals. So only about 15 minutes a game did they really have possession, but it was Philly who made the most of their opportunities. And as Rocky says, NYCFC played so arrogant, happy they got slapped. Definitely a karma match. Those are some strong words from our Timbers fan there for New York City FC. You know, NYCFC, I don't blame them for having a little bit of swagger, being the defending cup champs, being as they beat Philly in the playoffs last season, being as they have been on a good run. But there is a fine line between swagger, confidence, and cockiness. And you called it right. And he says as soon as Philly scored, the confidence pegged. And yeah, that took the wind out of their sails for sure. For them to give up goals within 2 minutes of each other, you're definitely right. That shows that they didn't think then at that point they could see the game out, or even at least play it out. And yeah, Rocky, if they're going to come at you, man, if those NYC fans are going to come at Portland, you come back at them. You let them know what's going on. Now, we'll see how things go in the future, because Portland it may be in a little bit of a mini restructure here, but they've got faith in Severisi to do it. And we'll see if NYCFC starts making moves as well, because they definitely have some core pieces in place too. But back to this game, back to the Philly NYCFC statistical game. Philly only had 308 passes and only completed 69% of their passes. That is extremely low, especially for a team to win with three goals. It is wild to conceptualize here. I can't even talk. It's such a crazy thing. 69% passing, 308 total passes, 35% possession, and yet you score three goals and win the game 3-1. Like that is insane. That is insane. It just shows me how well Philly is organized, that they had an excellent game plan to turn over NYCFC and get the opportunities. Because look at that duels. 60 duels won to NYCFC's 49. So they absolutely had a game plan for that. And if we look at our saves, three saves each. And as far as, are they going to put the blocks on this one, or we got to scroll down? Or block shots. Here we go. Only two block shots for Philly. So they were winning duels, turning over the ball. And I would suspect, and let's look at these passing numbers, I would suspect New York City did not have the ball in dangerous areas, but they still completed 81% of their passes that they attempted in the final third. So it's not like they were just dinking and dunking around in their defense, padding stats. They were dangerous, but could not get those final passes. And again, the XG should bear that out, right? Their XG, New York City, 0.06, and all very, very low chances, very low percentage chances. Philly had 1.7 expected goals, but if you look at their goals, Gazdag's goal was a 68% chance. Carranza's goal was a 29% chance, and Burke's goal was about a 40% chance. So Philly's goals came off of high-quality opportunities and excellent chances. Now let's take a look at some of the comments here. Angus McCorder says, I believe in the MLS Cup, Philly's key to victory, score first and hold on. I think that's great, and that's a good segue into our matchup, because if Philly can score first, that forces LAFC to have to play their possession and offensive style, which we've seen them do, rather than say, hey, let's try to counterattack and get the first goal ourselves, which we've also seen them do, and they've done both of it successfully. When you've got that talent and when you've got a depth like LAFC does and you've got good players, good coaching and preparedness, yeah, you can kind of say, we're going to sit back and then counter, or we're going to play some possession attacking style. You can do that. But if Philly scores first, Angus, I love that thought. If Philly scores first, that forces LAFC into their more offensive attack style of play, and then allows Philly to do what they do best, absorb pressure with their defender of the year in Glesnes and goalkeeper of the year in Blake, as well as a solid back line. And if Bedoya is healthy, you know, he knows what he's doing. He's got that experience. So that will absolutely play into Philly's hands. The next comments we got in here, Rocky says, as of one of the statistics here, 69% passing accuracy for Philly. Nice. Thanks, Rocky. I appreciate the sentiments on that one. Hey, we got T-Mac checking in. He says, how about that Philly LAFC final? I called that weeks ago when one of the hosts was SOP was doubting. Was that me? Was I doubting that? Maybe I was doubting it a little bit, but it is the matchup that I want to see. So T-Mac, thank you for keeping me honest. Thank you for sticking with your picks and having that conviction. But this is the matchup that I want to see. I think it's the matchup a lot of people want to see. The number one and the number two seed. And not just the number one and the number two seed at the end of the season, the top two teams throughout the season. So this is fantastic. Good rebuttal here from Rocky to Angus's comment. Changing in the last game is risky. So Philly changing their tactics to try to score first is risky. And you're absolutely right, Rocky. But, you know, is that Philly trying to outsmart themselves and say, hey, let's change it up. Nobody will expect it. Or we need to stay true to what we do. So we'll see what Jim Curtin comes out with. And I think a lot of this is going to depend on the health of these players. If Bedoya is able to go for the game, and I pray he will be, that may give them a little bit of flexibility. RBI says NYCFC were really bad when it came to putting their chances away, which is crazy because of how good they've been. They had 6 goals in their first 2 playoff games, and they couldn't get it done in this one. But yeah, with that talent too, I don't remember if Eber flubbed one, or if he had squandered some chances, but he really needs to take a step forward if he's going to be their primary striker next season, or if they're going to rely more on Talis Magno. Brother BKL checks in. Between the first half, NYCFC played clean and they played dirty until Carranza right to Johnson. Chapman didn't check VAR, did not give a red card. Thanks a lot. We've been lost that game. So, well, apparently a little VAR intrigue in there as well. Alan Chapman on my worst ref list says, Rocky, you know, I don't rate him as bad as worst ref in the league, but I don't rate him that well. And we actually are going to mention the referees, the referee of the year in the second half of the show. We'll go over the season awards too. But Red Bull Insider's right. I think generally pro referees are pretty bad. Ah, T-Mac, thanks, man. It wasn't me doubting. I had faith. Whew. That's the one thing I hate to be. If I'm going to be out in public, if I'm going to be talking to you guys about this stuff, the last thing I want to be is inconsistent or hypocritical. But T-Mac also jumps in and says, 95% sure Bedoya won't be able to go during the game, which is such a shame. He had such a great year at his age, better than the last few years. Bedoya is one of those guys that like gives me a little bit of faith that at my age, I can still go out and start exercising again and be fit and, you know, make sure that my kids aren't beating me on the soccer field or on the basketball court or wherever it is before they need to be. So Bedoya is one of my inspirations for that. So is Johnny Bornstein of the Chicago Fire. I mean, we'll see if they actually re-sign him. I think his contract is up. Speaking of that. But T-Mac also says Carranza didn't hit his head. He grazed his shoulder. Johnson embellished. Come on. All right. 2 sides to that story. Absolutely. And then we got Rocky chiming in here. I'd stay true, but just turn it up a notch. Philly is great at multiple goals. If they score first, they'll probably score 3 or 4. Excellent analysis, Rocky, as usual with you. And then, hey, we got Junior checking in. Junior Rich Young. Hola to you, Junior. Hey, man, I know you love getting your betting picks in on this. What's your take on LAFC Philly? You got any good prop bets that you can drop in the chat you think we should be looking at? Because I mean, first goal is always fun. Coin flip, obviously, always fun. Though I don't know if they do that with the home team in the cup. I'll have to check the rule book. But yeah, if anyone wants to chat any sort of betting, wagering, or anything, make sure you reach out to Junior there. And he is glad Philly Union is final bound. Me too, man. They have worked up to it. Now let's finish off the statistics here for this Philly NYCFC game. As you can see the shot map, Philly not really getting into the most dangerous areas, but high percentage chances with those shots. That's what counts, those high percentage chances. And if we're going to look at the passing network again, Philly not completing a lot of passes, but getting the best of their opportunity. So that is the statistics there. So now we have an LAFC hosting Philadelphia Union in the final. This is what we wanted to see. You're going to have the best players in the league at LAFC and Philly going head-to-head. You have two excellent coaches. You've got Jim Curtin, who's been doing it for a while in Philly, proving everyone wrong, winning a supporter shield a couple of years back during the pandemic season, so people still doubted him at that point. He had been coaching for his job. I think he had something like 4 1-year deals in a row with Philly. They just didn't want to go long term with him. And credit to Curtin, because every time ownership management would start signing different players and want to play a different style, Jim Curtin is like, hey, here we go. Well, all right, fine. I'll change and I'll coach to it. And he was successful with it. And now they've got it. So I love seeing Jim Curtin, who's got a little bit of history, I think, with the Chicago Fire, my hometown team. So love seeing him coaching in the final against Steve Cherundolo in his first year as an MLS head coach. Now, he had been coaching the Las Vegas Lights, the affiliate of LAFC, so he kind of knew what was going on with the organization. But to replace Bob Bradley, a legend in American soccer, like this was a huge, huge task for him. And yet the voters picked Wilfred Nancy for coach of the year. So anyway, I think Wilfred Nantse or Jim Curtin. I'll have to go check. We'll talk about that in the second half of the show. It was Jim Curtin. There we go. I got to remember my own show notes. So that is kind of the coaching matchup there. So I love to see it. I love to see these guys coaching and to see Glesnes, Blake, Bedoya, hopefully Bedoya, as well as Kai Wagner, and I'm blanking on the other center back for Philly, seeing them deal with the likes of Arango, Poku, and Vela, who I hope is 100% to go, right? That is going to be an excellent matchup. And then seeing Gazdag and Ura and Flock trying to counter against Acosta and Ilya and Zimmerman, that is going to be just excellent matchups all over the field. I can't wait to see it. Now let's take a couple more comments and then we'll take our halftime break. RBI says, you're going to talk about Ben Olsen in Houston. We absolutely are going to talk about Ben Olsen in Houston in the second half. So stay tuned for that. Hey, we've got Yo Daddy jumping in the chat. Welcome to the chat, man. He says the LA Galaxy need Guatemala players. Last time I checked, the players suck, but they would need these players. Their goals come unexpectedly. You know what's funny talking about I'm sorry, I'm mixing up Guatemala with El Salvador's coach Hugo Perez, who's been linked to some jobs. But is there any particular Guatemala player that you can think of that would be a good fit for the Galaxy or for MLS? I love that we're seeing a lot of these Central American players jump in to MLS and USL, and that MLS is not just developing the next generation of American talent through our academy systems and through these teams and through MLS Next Pro, but also helping the development of CONCACAF have some really good players. And that's why you see some of those upsets in the World Cup. It's kind of funny if you think about it. Some of the U.S. struggles come at the hands of guys who've developed in MLS and USL. But anyway, yeah, Yo Daddy, let us know if there's a Guatemalan player that you think is great. And he says, keep the good content. Thank you so much for the compliment. Junior says, I like the fact that Philly's number one goalkeeper is Jamaican. My country. All right, man. I didn't realize you were Jamaican. That's awesome, Junior. Yes, and Blake has been playing lights out goalkeeper of the year. And then finally, Rocky says, I have some great news when we go back to the Timbers. Don't let me forget. I've got the headline about Savarese in my second half notes we are going to talk about. I won't let you forget about that. But for now, everyone, we're going to take our halftime break. So go ahead, hurry up. We'll be off the air for about 30 seconds here so you can get yourself a nice glass of Skira Icelandic spring water. And if you don't, get out to your local 7-Eleven so you can grab the drink from our sponsor. I also want to let you know, if you're on the podcast side, John Donovan, our good friend, longtime supporter of the show, no fire clips this week as the fire season ended right before the playoffs came out, obviously not making it there. So we will hopefully have him back either in the offseason to talk about a few fire news and updates, or next season once again when the fires start up. But we're going to take a 30-second halftime break, and we will see you on the other side, everybody.
This episode of Sons of a Pitch, an American soccer podcast, brought to you by Nice Premium Iceland Pure Spring Water. Also by Donovan Food Brokerage, a sales and marketing firm focused on food service sales in the Midwest. And lastly, by Skira, Icelandic spring water, available at your local 7-Eleven.
All right, we are back from our halftime break. Thank you to everyone who's stuck with us and who is just lighting up the chat. Thank you especially to Skira Icelandic spring water and our good friend John Donovan, who is able to set up that sponsorship for us. Guys, go out, get yourself a bottle of Skira Icelandic spring water. I was in Iceland on vacation a couple weeks ago. And if you go back and watch the second half of our last weekly recap, I tell you a little bit about my time looking at EPL games in London, a trip to Iceland. Like, their tap water is our mineral water. Like, that is how good the water is in Iceland. Like, the hotel encouraged me to drink from the tap. That's how good their water is. And that is the water that Skira is bringing to the United States and being distributed at the 7-Eleven. So make sure you guys go get a bottle, check it out, pH balanced, do you right for sure. Thank you, Yo Daddy, for referencing me to Antonio Lopez, to Chucho Lopez here, who has been playing, Well, this is the he's from Mexico but represents the Guatemalan national team. So this is a guy to look out for, MLS fans. Let your clubs know. He's 25 years old, represents Guatemala. He plays for Club America but has been on loan in 2020. 14 appearances already for the defensive midfielder here for the Guatemala national team. So he could really take a step forward getting signed by a MLS team. So thanks for referencing that. That is a great name to keep an eye on. And he also says Oscar Santis is another great midfielder. Guatemala, man, looks like they are on the up. But anyway, let's get into some of the other news that we wanted to talk about. Some things from last week. First of all, Houston. Houston is close, if they haven't officially announced, to signing Ben Olsen, the former DC United player and coach, as their new head coach. Please leave your comments in the chat while I rant for a minute here, because I think this is a terrible, terrible move. And I have nothing against Ben Olsen, and I think he's a good coach. I think he's kind of a player's coach, good locker room guy, knows the league. And I think that's what separated him, is that he is someone with MLS experience. But I don't think this makes sense for Houston, because is Ben Olsen the kind of coach that is going to come into a scenario where you've got a couple DPs already locked up, like Hector Herrera from Mexico, the Mexican national team star? You need to reset the culture. You've had four coaches over the last three seasons, and now he's the fifth coming into in this fourth season. Then he's not the culture setting kind of guy. I don't believe he's not the guy who's going to, maybe he is the guy who's going to win the locker room over, but I don't think he's the guy who's going to build a winning culture on the field. And that's what it's got to translate to. So I really don't like this move, and look at his record with DC. He had the worst record in MLS history with DC, but oddly enough, that same season won the US Open Cup and then also made an Eastern Conference final. So for a guy who has coached as long as he did with DC United, I don't think he's the right man to come in and stabilize a Houston club. The only thing I can see is they're going to bring him in on a very short-term deal, 2 years kind of thing, and then transition him into like a front office managerial role, and then allow them to clean house for 2 years, get rid of some DPs, get rid of some contracts, bring up some academy players, and then get their coach who's going to get them on a trophy path in like 3 years. I don't know if I agree with that either, because you can turn teams around in one season in MLS if you know what you're doing and if you do it right. So I think Houston is just floundering right now, and I don't believe that this is a really, really good move for them. So let me hear what you think about them signing Ben Olsen, or really close to Ben Olsen. RBI, I know you've had thoughts. Red Bull Insider, tell me, what are your thoughts here on Olsen to Houston? You said you got some interesting takes. I'm ready for it. Brother BKL's jumping in. He's been bad through every single season with DC. I mean, why Houston didn't choose any other coaches? Think about what NYC were when they chose Ronnie Dyla, right? Like, there are other coaches out there. Like I mentioned, people were rumoring Hugo Perez, the El Salvador coach, to an MLS job. And I think a lot of the crazy, like, USMNT haters are like, no, he can't go to MLS because we need to fire Berhalter and bring Hugo Perez in there. I don't support that at all. But anyway, so that is the news of Ben Olsen. I don't like it. But he does have an excellent relationship with management, with Pat Onstad. So I think that's given him the edge. The next bit of news that we need to jump in on, Joseph Martinez, who has been the face of Atlanta United, has supposedly scored his final goal, which just happened to be the goal of the year, with the five stripes. They are probably going to trade him, transfer him, or potentially just buy him out. All the reporting says that he will not be back with Atlanta United. It sucks to see a guy who is this good, who has that big of a personality, who is so watchable for his talent and so likable for his charisma, to end his career with Atlanta United in such terrible fashion. He's not the same player as he was before the knee injury, but he could still be a very, very good player. He got shafted by them hiring some terrible coaches with some terrible ideas, and now it just was almost a bridge too far for him to come back and play under new coaching. And they're definitely putting stock in Thiago Almada and the rest of the team that they're going to build this offseason, and they're moving on from Joseph Martinez. So I hope he stays in MLS so we can watch him week in and week out. But if not, gosh, where is he going to end up? Could he go to the English Championship? Is he going to go to a middle to smaller league in Europe? You think he ends up back in South America, maybe playing in Argentina or Brazil? I don't know. I haven't heard any reporting to that or rumors to that effect, but I hope, selfishly, he stays in MLS. And Brother BKL even says, I smell a trade through MLS, or he hears transfers to Venezuela or La Liga. Oh, might not be a bad move to go to maybe a middle-tier team in La Liga. So that would be interesting. Yo, Daddy, you hit it right on the head, man. We are transitioning to MLS changing the playoff bracket for next season. This was another thing I wanted to mention. There is a lot of reporting out there. It was reported and verified by The Athletic that MLS, instead of going from 7 playoff teams, single elimination, first seed bye, what we had this year, maybe expanding it to 8 teams, single elimination games, they're going totally different direction here. World Cup style, tournament style, where they are going to take the top 8 seeds in the East and the West and then put them into 2 groups of 4 and then play round robin and then have the 2 teams advance out of those into a knockout round. I think this sucks. I think this is stupid. I think it's dumb. I think it's one of the worst ideas I've ever heard. I will give it a single point because they're actually thinking outside of the box and being creative with it. But I think it's dumb. I think it's stupid. And I think it's going to happen. And that's what hurts me the most. Listening to Extra Time, the MLS League podcast, talk about it. Like, you had Charlie Davies who, and David Goss and Andrew Wiebe all playing it up and, like, supporting it but not being excited about it. So to me, that seems – that's where I'll put my tinfoil Blues Brothers hat on and say the league is telling them to promote this thing because we know people aren't going to like it, but it's going to give us 20 more playoff games and more money from the Apple TV deal. So I hate it from the sense that it's a money grab. I hate it from the sense in that it completely devalues the regular season because there's no incentive for playing for home field advantage, just playing to make the playoffs, right? This is Greg Popovich, San Antonio Spurs type stuff that pissed off the fans and the league. If you finish first or if you finish eighth, it doesn't matter. You still got to play a round robin. Supposedly they're saying that if you are the first seed, then you host the other 3 teams. And if you're the 4 seed in the group, then you're going to have to travel to the other teams. Maybe that gets worked out. So there is some incentive, but I don't think it's good. Rocky's right. This is basically MLS's back style. And I think that influenced, right? The MLS's back tournament was so popular and successful that they're like, oh, cool. Maybe we should do this for the playoffs. But they're forgetting the fact that the MLS's back tournament happened after the pandemic where we didn't have soccer for over a year in any kind of sort or fashion. And we didn't have professional sports in the United States. Like, that's why it was so successful. We had pro sports back. We had our soccer back. And we had a tournament. It was wonderful. But also, that tournament was to get teams ready for the regular season, not to decide the champion of the league. I think this is terrible. Also, we're seeing the league add more Leagues Cup games, Campeones Cup, exhibition matches, expanded U.S. Open Cup, all this other stuff. Now you want to add 20 more playoff games? That's insane. It's an insanely congested schedule. And unless you're going to do away with the salary cap and maybe all that extra Apple TV money is going to allow for it, then that's the only way you can really build depth out. But you can't do that because you don't have the academies in place yet for every team. You don't have the MLS is next, MLS or MLS next, MLS next pro teams. I think this is stupid. I don't want to see it. I really want to know what the players think about this because – What would they have to play for, right? Why would they play? You already went from 2 home and home playoff games down to one to make it more exciting. Now you have to play three playoff games to advance out of a group stage to a knockout round. Like, they're going backwards in every sense of the word. I don't like it. Rocky's right. Yeah, they're getting paid for sure. Angus McCorder says, I am not for the World Cup style playoffs. Will they be separate East and West, or will they make it a mixed bag with the draw? The way I understand it, Angus, is, yeah, of the top eight in the West are going to go in two groups of four in the West, and then the top eight in the East will be two groups of four in the East. Thankfully, they didn't go so far backwards to move teams with higher points in one conference to the other one, right? And then Brother BKL even adds, plus CONCACAF Champions League 2024 new format is launching. You're right. That's even more games. They're bringing in more qualifying for Canadian Premier League, Central American teams, couple extra MLS teams even. Like, I am completely against it. We need to move on. We need to get to the next topic here. Rocky, this is it, man. You're up. Portland Timbers have extended Gio Savarese through 2025. With a club option in 2026. Head coach Giovanni Savarese, American soccer, I don't know if I want to call him an American soccer legend yet, but someone who's been very influential in American soccer, coaching the Timbers for five seasons, coaching the New York Cosmos prior to that, playing in MLS and NASL, and I think even some indoor leagues maybe. Savarese gets a contract extension through 2025 with an additional one-year club option. In his 5 years with the Portland Timbers, according to Wikipedia, so take it with a grain of salt, 83 wins, 45 draws, and 59 losses. So he has a 44% win percentage. Definitely a good coach. And I love that he knows how to play in the league, knows how to coach in the league, knows when his team is not at the talent level of his opponents and adjusts his tactics and expectations for that. Knows when his team can go toe-to-toe with some of the juggernauts, and that's when they make their MLS Cup runs. Now, he doesn't have a trophy with Portland. I can't remember. Did they win the MLS's back tournament that year? Yes, they did. So he's got the MLS's back tournament trophy for that. But no MLS, I think he's 0-2 in MLS Cup appearances. So that's what they're extending, and they're targeting a new striker. They get him some offense, they are going to go toe-to-toe with some of these teams in the West, and I love it. And here are Rocky's comments. Super happy with Gio. I love it. By the way, I think Gio Savarese has the best eyes in MLS. Like, when he gets angry and the camera cuts to him on the sideline, dude, his stare could turn you to stone. I love seeing his facial expressions and his eyes on the sideline. But Rocky's big news. Congratulations, my friend. Rocky says, I got approved for my press pass. I'll be on the pitch for all Timbers games next year. Rocky, congrats, man. That is just some great news for you. It's great to see that your content, your coverage, your passion for your Portland Timbers team has grown into being able to be on the field and covering them. So everyone, even if you don't want to follow the Timbers, but you'll be there with Rocky on the sideline when they play against your favorite teams and for all the MLS action. Rocky, congrats, man. Next stop, Apple TV. They're interviewing over 400 people for the new broadcast spots. So get in on that. Next stop, Apple TV, man. So congratulations, and thank you for confirming. Gio with the Timbers had won the MLS's back and two Western Conferences, as well as a Cascadia Cup. So a very, very respectable career, but still looking for the big hardware, right? U.S. Open Cup, MLS Cup, Supporter Shield needs it. All right. We got a lot of congrats coming in for Rocky here. Leave your comments in the chat. Make sure that you follow at TalkNDaWoods on all your social media platforms. Look out for Rocky there. Ah, great news, my friend. Great news. You're going to make Mike real jealous. He's been slacking on his Canadian men's national team press pass. Next little bit of news. And here, let me bring up the headline here on the screen. DC United, if you guys remember, had been investigated for a couple of things here, both in their coaching hiring process as well as the Taxi Fontas racism allegations. As far as the coaching process goes, it was alleged and discovered by the league that they did not follow the hiring requirements for hiring and considering minority and underrepresented coaches. DC said, look, yes, we did. We followed all of these guidelines. We followed the rules that the league has. However, the coach, one of the minority coaches said, withdrew their candidacy or said they didn't want to be interested in the job because they wanted to start fresh. They didn't want to bring someone in the middle of the season. And we wanted to bring someone in the middle of the season. But the MLS, the league said, nope, that doesn't count. You fell short then by not having them as a final candidate. And we are fining you $25,000 for that. So you can read all of that at MLSsoccer.com. Or if you want to pause the show here and listen to it. But DC United, very political in their statement. We respect the decision. While we disagree, we respect it and we'll follow it. The other big news, Taxi Fountas, if you recall, was alleged to have uttered racist statements against Inter Miami defender Aimé Mabika in the last time that they played. Here's what's interesting about the league's findings and report here, right? The league found the allegations by Inter Miami to be credible. They found Fontas's response to not be credible when they investigated and spoke with him, but they could not independently confirm anything actually happened. So I don't know what, if any, discipline they are going to mete out to Taxi Fountas. But DC United, again, very political. We support that. We support the investigation. We participated in it following the claim that Fountas used racially abusive language. We appreciate and accept the findings and the conclusion that the act in question could not be confirmed. So they believe Inter Miami and their player. They don't believe Taxi Fountas, but they can't confirm it. So again, the MLS is like, well, something probably happened. And that's all we can say. They are in this article. They said they are going to look at their policies because that doesn't make sense how we can say something happened, but we can't take action on it. Last bit of news here. Wanted to talk about with everyone the typical Inter Miami going to sign Lionel Messi rumors are back and they are bigger than ever. They're getting legs, pardon the pun here. They're saying that Inter Miami is increasingly confident that they are in a position to sign Leo Messi. However, if you continue to read the article, Barcelona wants to bring him back. PSG wants to re-sign him. Obviously, why wouldn't these teams want it, right? Miami's ownership supportedly has had numerous meetings with Messi's father, but I guess yet to actually talk with Messi and his agent. I don't know if there's some kind of contract tampering or whatever the case is. But yeah, supposedly they are ready to sign and are confident they're going to sign 35-year-old Leo Messi. We'll see what happens. Messi's focused on the World Cup right now, despite retiring a couple times from the international game and coming back, as you know, all the great players who haven't won a major international competition do. He is back in the mix for Argentina this World Cup 2022. And I think after that, as the article suggests, he is going to make his move. Connor Knows Soccer is jumping here saying Messi's contract with PSG ends in June. Likely he'll go back to Barcelona or re-sign with PSG. Yep, Connor, whatever you're reading is exactly what I'm reading. I think that's what's going to happen. If he's still got, you know, 1 or 2 years of high quality soccer in him, despite being 37, why would you come back to MLS? And that's, again, I'm not knocking MLS. I'm not knocking Miami, but it is a step down from La Liga, from League One, from European soccer, from Champions League, though it would be great to see him playing against some Mexican clubs in the CONCACAF Champions League, should Miami make it there. That would be great. But I really don't see this happening at all. And because it's been a rumor for the last 2 years, ever since Inter Miami had a franchise, I just can't give it any sort of credit until he actually inks it. Angus McCorder says, I will believe him returning if he arrives on our shores. Yeah, you're right. If he's here at the training facility in gear, I'll believe it. But if he's just, you know, hitting the club in Miami with David Beckham, who knows? I don't know if that's any credibility. One final thought. We're going to jump in here. Yo Daddy says, your thought on the Weston McKennie injury. I actually have not read up on it. I'm just trying to like Google a couple articles. Connor, thank you for jumping in saying that he is day to day. I'm trying to see here, a thigh injury. He's not expected to miss the Champions League game against PSG. So that is good news. Thigh injury. That could be a lot of different things, right? It could be a real bad bruise. It could be something down to the bone. It could be pulled muscle. I don't know. Again, I'm not a medical expert, and I'm not trying. I'm trying to read the tea leaves here, so to say. But man, I just hope he is 100% for the World Cup, because you know the U.S. has talent, but they have talent 1 through 11. I'm really nervous about 12 through the rest of that roster. That's where we really need to fill out before the 2026 World Cup, is to get that depth to be super competitive then. But I do not think they're saying is he's got a thigh injury that he's going to miss it. If he's day to day, he's going to miss the World Cup. BKL, he's got a different thought. He thinks Weston could miss the World Cup. So yo daddy, I hope that Juventus's medical team, look, they're playing in Champions League. They want to get him back fit to help Champions League, as well as to help them participate and play in the league table. Because, man, Juventus is sitting seventh right now in the Serie A table. They need Weston playing his best soccer. We need Weston playing his best soccer. So hopefully we can really get that up. Connor knows soccer, says thigh injuries are tricky. I think if Greg calls him in and he goes 90, let him do it. But if he starts and plays 45 and comes off, I don't know, man, that'll be tough. You don't want to use Weston as a sub. And if you're of the mindset, well, Pulisic is our super sub now, I don't agree with that. People do. That now you've got your two best players coming off the bench. It can be really hard to play well. Now I'm going to give Rocky the final thought here, just as a congratulations present to him for getting his Portland Timbers press pass. Rocky says, I'm 100% sure some of these DP players are receiving money under the table. This is in reference to our Messi coming to MLS conversation. Bale, Chiellini, etc. Even Miami was hit hard with their multiple DP contracts. Whether they're receiving it under the table or not, they are definitely, I would say the clubs and the league are definitely giving them additional deals, promoting them for sponsorships, for extra promotions, getting them in commercials, TV spots, movie appearances, whatever the case may be. Like, the league is definitely helping them out with that, and that's probably not being publicized. Or their franchises are definitely helping them out with that, right? And that's not being as publicized. Probably a lot of, I'm not going to call it hush-hush agreements. I can't think of the phrase right now. Non-disclosure agreements. There it is. Can't talk about it, right? But you better believe that these guys are coming to MLS. They're getting their contracts with the team, and they're getting their contracts with the league, I should say. They absolutely are getting tons more sponsorship deals, other things. I don't know if there's cuts of jersey sales. Like, if I'm Messi, give me 1% of jersey sales in MLS. Work that into my contract, right, if they can get away with it. So that is my final thought. That is Rocky's final thought. Check the chat. Check Twitter. Check everything going on for the latest on all of the news around the league. I want to thank each and every one of you for sticking with us here throughout our, gosh, we're pushing an hour-long conversation, man. And I was getting tired. I was having a sugar crash. You guys rejuvenated me. That's what we do here with SOP Soccer, right? Love it. A couple of quick programming updates before we wrap up. Support the show. Click an ad. Send a super chat or super thanks. Remember, go look at goals.tv, GOLZ.tv. They are aggregating soccer content from a lot of YouTube soccer creators and podcasters. So check that out. Enjoy MLS Cup coming up. Like, subscribe, share the link, share the channel, get some subscribers, tell your fans, tell your family, tell everyone about us. We need to get up to that 7,000 subscriber mark. That is our next big milestone that we're going to have. We've plateaued right around 6,200. Let's get up to 7,000. We can do it with your help. I do want to remind everyone, after MLS Cup, we are going to have a modified schedule. We will be doing less of these kind of live chats, these weekly chats. We'll be doing some more YouTube shorts and videos. We'll be developing the website, doing some writing. Mike is going to start doing some more kind of watch-alongs for other various leagues and things, international stuff, World Cup coverage. As you all know, it's been a crazy year personally for Mike and myself, with Mike losing both of his parents, as well as just having a family of six. And with myself losing my mother during last winter, almost a year ago, and then having my family of five to support, and starting a new job all within the last year. So we kind of need to take some time and have our off season as well and refocus on our families. So with that, I'll let you guys go with these final thoughts from MLS. Coach of the year, Jim Curtin. Newcomer of the year, Thiago Almada. Comeback player of the year, Gonzalo Higuain. Defender of the year, Jacob Glesnes. Goalkeeper of the year, Andre Blake. But Pedro Gallese had save of the year. Goal of the year, Joseph Martinez. Young player of the year, Jesus Ferreira. Golden Boot winner, Hani Mukhtar. And referee of the year, as we teased it earlier, Ismail Elfath. I actually really like him and respect him as an official, and I love when he referees a game. So there it is, everything. Hey, Ramon Poblano jumps in here at the end, man. Great to have you. Congrats to LAFC, dude. I'm sure you're pumped, man. I can't wait to hear about your experiences there. Connor, thank you for reaching out. If there's anything, we will let you know. Guys, thank you for all jumping in. For Ramon for jumping in here, and I'm sure he's just going nuts with LAFC and the black and gold. Give my best to Los Cuervos, man. Yo Daddy for finding us and jumping in the chat. Brother BKL, Connor Knows Soccer, Rocky at Talking to Woods, Red Bull Insider RBI, Junior Rich Young, Angus McCorder, and everyone else who's listening on the podcast side, as well as everyone else who's listening later on YouTube. Thank you all so much. Thank you to John Donovan, Skira Icelandic Spring Water, Donovan Food Brokerage. We appreciate everything you do for the show. Guys, I'm out of breath. I need to go take a nap. Actually, I'm just going to go to bed. You guys have a wonderful Halloween night. Hope you got some good candy, and we will see you after MLS Cup. Turn those notifications on so you know when we do our wrap-up show. Enjoy all that MLS Cup has to offer. Good night, everybody.